You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Happy New Year, everyone at Radio Albion. This is the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and I am feeling a little bit better. This time last week, I'm at the final hours of COVID, my second round. This is being recorded on the 3rd of January. We'll be going out on the 4th of January, 2024. And the title for today is Houthi Mania 2024. And I haven't dealt with them directly at all. I'm not claiming any sort of expertise in North Yemen or Yemen in general. But anyone who even has a cursory understanding of Middle Eastern life has come across them and has certainly come across one of the most strategic choke points in the world. The Bab Mandab Strait. This is the choke point between the Red Sea and the Arabian Sea, directly across from Djibouti, where, by the way, China has a naval base. And today I'm going to use two articles from Mike Whitney. The first from the 26th of December last year, and the second from yesterday. And I've cited him before, I read him before. He can be a little naive in certain things, but in general is an important source of information and analysis. And what's been happening, how the U.S. has been in a panic mode, because now, you have to admit, the U.S. is now fully militarily on Israel's side in this war, in its war against the Houthi militia attacks on certain kinds of shipping. It shows how a well-equipped, disciplined, but relatively small army can take on an empire. It has the battle-hardened core, and it shows you how a certain level of virtue and solidarity can take on, well, in this case, a dying and poorly equipped empire. They've been attacking ships headed to Israel, and only ships headed to Israel. And how easy it is at this choke point to send tremors into the global economy. The Bab al-Mandab Strait is incredibly strategic. Everyone who wants to get into the Red Sea, Suez Canal, has to pass through it. And now the Houthis are from northern Yemen initially, and we can't go into too much detail. They're a Shiite. The movement is a militarization of the Houthi tribe, but they're also a Shiite movement with some support for especially, you know, Sunni groups like Hamas. They're battle-hardened because they've been militarized since at least 2004. They overthrew Ali Soleh, who was initially backed by the U.S. And once he no longer was, they sided with him to take a good chunk of the now unified Yemen. The Saudi-led military intervention has been a miserable failure. And now they're a key player. They're organized on the same basis as Hezbollah. And as of right now, are one of the most effective, forces against the Zionist entity. course, the press has lied through their teeth about what they want. They're very clear about what they want. And it shows you how, again, I don't know if you have seen the video of the Houthi, I guess you'd call them Marines or Special Forces, landing on the top of a cargo ship on a helicopter and storming it. It's extremely impressive. This isn't some, you know, fourth world Ukrainian style militia. This is a first rate movement. Now, this part of the Red Sea we're talking about here, that narrow part, it's not an exaggeration to say it's the most important shipping corridor in the world. I think it's about between 12 and 15% of international trade goes through it. And as far as the cargo container ships are concerned, about a third have to go through that at one time or another. So now insurance premiums have gone up, prices go up, etc. Now, I'm so tired of the sensationalist idea, World War III is around the corner. How many times have you heard that just in the last 5 years? The media lives on these hyperactive conclusions. And we don't know if that's the case here. We don't know if the U.S. has the capacity, you know my opinion on that, to intervene directly rather than just with a naval presence, or actually a substantial naval presence, doesn't seem to be working anyway. But whether this is financial Armageddon, well, if it hasn't happened yet, then it's not going to happen. Now, Whitney is a very good writer, and he cites mainstream sources only to give the mainstream point of view. And what's happening is that the mainstream point of view is panicking, because they really don't know what to do here. They weren't expecting anything like this. Remember, the Houthi militia doesn't seem to have, they're not gaining anything from this. They don't have direct and regular intercourse with the Palestinians. They're Shiites, which separates them a little bit from the bulk of Palestine. It doesn't matter. They're risking their lives and their entire country for the sake of standing up. Finally, someone is saying, we're not going to stop until Israel does one thing, and that is to pause the war long enough, but they would like it to end entirely, but to be able to resupply Gaza with basic food and medicine. Now, CNN made the claim that this is going to be a huge shock in the global economy. Usually in American media, when they make reference to the Houthi rebels, they have to say Iran backed like it's their title. But the Iranians don't need to be there to give them the incentive to do this. Of course, Israel is financed every day by the U.S., so even if they are backed by Iran, they're Shiites after all, eccentric Shiites, but that doesn't seem to matter. And then, of course, the World War I predictions as the wider regional conflict. And Hamas was quite aware of this possibility when it attacked in October. The shipping lanes, despite the fact that the only ships that are getting hit are those directly going to Israel or owned by Israeli corporations. So, but it doesn't matter. And I guarantee you, it's with Israel itself, as well as the U.S. Navy, are saying, no, all ships are in danger, which is a lie. But as it stands right now, and it's hard to get updates, you know, traffic is pretty much at a crawl. The Washington Post, this is last week, said that BP was the latest to announce a pause in its shipments through the Red Sea. Big names, MSC and the Evergreen Group, these big shipping companies, they're avoiding the Suez Canal instead of simply not stopping at Israel, any Israeli port, which was the whole point of this. No one's getting touched that's not doing that. But they'd rather go out of business than to blame Israel for their situation. So apparently, according to the Post, and you take that with a grain of salt, they now have to go around the Cape of Good Hope around South Africa. And there's been no attempt to even talk to the Houthi militia. Zero. Because apparently, the U.S., as we all know, never negotiates with any military force it deems inferior to itself. Let me repeat myself here. The Houthis have repeatedly said that ships that are not bound for Israeli ports will not be attacked. And yet, almost as if to show solidarity with the Israelis, they have rerouted their vessels, which is a very a great amount of time that's added to all of this. Whitney agrees with me. The Houthis have nothing to gain here. The point is to pressure Israel into not slaughtering the entire population of the Gaza Strip, which is not exactly unreasonable. It's to allow starving and now disease-ridden Palestinians access to food, water, and medical supplies, since there's no potable water in Gaza anymore anyway. It's actually a very simple and reasonable thing, and yet the U.S. sees it as a challenge to American and Zionist primacy, a threat to their what's left of their regional hegemony and leadership, and something that they struggle with, the idea of consequences. Their carte blanche policy to kill and maim as many Palestinians as possible. Not that the U.S. has any leverage over Israel. It does not. And because there's been no outreach to the Houthi militia, Houthi movement, Houthi tribe, anybody, that means violence is all that's left. And in fact, I guess 2 weeks ago, that hapless Lloyd Austin cobbled together what we're told is a, I think it's now a 9-member coalition for so-called freedom of navigation. And all that means is freedom of Israeli navigation. And as it stands, as of a couple days ago, it's Britain, Bahrain, of all people, Canada, France, Italy, the Netherlands, Norway, the Seychelles, and Spain, but Spain has dropped out. But this coalition gets put together before anyone even sees if there's a diplomatic solution possible. We all know what the solution is. But of course, that's beyond the realm of possibility for American elites. The regime is so close to Israel that there is really no difference anymore. Now, there's Russian experts reported on by John Helmer. I don't know much about him. The Russian newspaper, Vedomosti, says that the Russian military thinks that they're going to attack the command centers, the ammunition depots, etc., by targeted, even using special forces, kind of like the actions in Syria. Now, of course, the Houthis are opposed by Al-Qaeda and ISIS, as every successful Islamic movement is, but they've largely been driven out of Yemen, so they're a very... There's a tiny speck of territory that they hold, and that's about it. Saudi Arabia, of course, UAE are involved as well. But as I mentioned, the Saudi Arabians have failed to dislodge them from their bases in Yemen. I'm talking about, of course, the Houthi militia. The Wall Street Journal, in what you know, this is what you might expect. I'm going to quote them directly here. Wall Street Journal says this. The press is reporting that the Biden administration is contemplating the use of military force in response to continuing attacks on commercial shipping by the Houthi militia in Yemen. Well, it's about time. The Houthi missile attacks pose the most significant threat to global shipping in decades, and they will continue unless a global coalition unites to stop them. The question is whether the U.S. and other Western navies are merely going to play defense and catch missiles as the Houthis set the terms of battle. Sooner or later, a Houthi missile may get past naval defenses and kill American sailors. Then the White House will have little choice other than to strike back. Now, you don't have to be a genius to know that they're not going to stop there, because they think that the Houthis are just an outgrowth of the Iranian revolutionaries, and that's not entirely true, but even if it is, it's irrelevant. They're extremely popular. They're extremely popular globally, not just in the Islamic world. The Wall Street Journal continues this ridiculous tirade, saying eventually Iran's rulers have to know that their assets, military and nuclear, are at risk if they continue to foment disorder, attack U.S. allies, and target American bases or ships. So there's definitely an element within the foreign policy establishment that supports an idea of war on Yemen. I mean, that's where we are right now. When we say war on Yemen, we're talking about full-scale Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Space Force, whatever that does. So the way that the regime is going to go to Americans, well, I don't know if you've seen the AIPAC, American Israel Public Affairs Committee, claiming that because one part of the slogan of the Houthi militia is, you know, death to America, death to Israel, etc., more or less. And therefore, that, well, it says death to America here, as if they're talking about, you know, the Liberty Bell. Of course, what they mean, they're talking about the government, the regime, because the average American doesn't give a damn what's happening there, except if their money and their men are going to be enforcing it. The Houthis, of course, are the good guys here, and I guarantee you, worldwide, they're seen as such. They're only attacking ships that are relevant to the Israeli war effort. Other ships are being left alone. Everyone knows that to be true, but they can't say it, because that would mean that they're singling out Israel as the problem here, which they cannot do. But here's what one of the military spokesmen, actually this is a council member, Mohammed al-Bukati, he says this: even if America succeeds in mobilizing the entire planet, our operations in the Red Sea will not stop unless the massacre in Gaza stops. We will not give up the responsibility of defending the Mustahafin, which means the oppressed ones, of the earth. They're talking about humanitarian aid, not the destruction of Tel Aviv. And they're willing to go to war with the empire. Like that hasn't been successfully done in the past. After 9 years of war with Saudi Arabia, Washington provided many of the weapons, and the embargo, ultimately you're talking about a minimum of 400,000 dead just from that in Yemen. They're not backing down, they're not caving in, as Whitney reminds us all the time. So either the Gaza ceasefire takes place, or this will continue. Now, of course, the Wall Street Journal and these other places will love to see, well, you know, suburban Americans are going to be attacked tomorrow, which they do for every war. But Saudi oil fields, infrastructure, are going to be targeted. Attacks on American bases that have no right to be there in the first place. And, of course, commercial shipping will get spooked even more than they already are. And, of course, we know who the real winners will be. At a minimum, it's the BRICS system. It's China and Russia. And there will be no, because this is then the official entry of the U.S. into the Israel-Gaza war, in fighting an increasingly important enemy of Israel in Yemen. So whatever is left of this credibility and global hegemony is going down the drain. This black hole of the Arabian Peninsula. One of the leaders, Saeed al-Houthi, said this directly to the U.S. He said, if the U.S. wants to go to war with us, they must know that we're waiting. We want a direct war between Yemen and the U.S. and Israel. We are not afraid of America, and the people of Yemen will stand against them. Well, I think it's a lot more than that. It's not just the people of Yemen. It's the people of the planet, because even with a tightly controlled media in the Western world, most people are well aware of what's happening against what amounts to a defenseless population. Because Israel is preventing food, water, and medicine from reaching Palestinians in Gaza, the Houthis take this very reasonable policy of disrupting Israeli shipping. It's a very simple solution to the crisis in the Red Sea, but it shows you the nature of this oligarchy, this regime, that it's not even coming up that there's a very easy solution. A few days ago, there were more Houthi attacks. The Maersk Hangzhou, which had, you know, a bunch of these small skiffs filled with militants with small arms. And they were ultimately killed by naval helicopters, but That's not particularly important here. Hangzhou was attacked again. It was hit by a missile, so it wasn't direct intervention on the Houthi parts. They called for a mayday, and apparently nothing really happened. The vessel was seaworthy. There were no injuries. And that's been more recently, but these were going directly to Israeli ports. So Maersk did resume sailing because the U.S. Navy was there. The Pentagon said they'd be safe. Clearly they were not. And so now they've called for another pause. This multinational naval task force, I mentioned the members already, or sort of members. It's called, believe it or not, get ready, if you haven't heard this, Operation Prosperity Guardian. Because, you know, our prosperity depends on these ships being able to dock at Israeli ports and via Israeli companies. So it's prosperity, all right, but not for me and you. Clearly, the missile and drone attacks have not stopped. So already, this task force has failed miserably. The Navy's talking about killing a bunch of these guys in skiffs, but that's pretty much about it. The 48 hours that they initially caused for a pause in shipping is largely up. I don't know what's going to happen this time tomorrow. But this freedom of navigation scam, this naval task force, is incredibly foolish. Because there is nobody in the region, or pretty much anywhere but the U.S., and maybe Northern Europe, they have no illusions as to why this is happening. Whitney is right to call this a sadistic war on Palestine. The Houthis are the good guys. So for the U.S. to put, not just use its own navy, but to mobilize all these other tiny navies, using force to express its full support of this war, puts this in the stratosphere of absurdity. Again, no attempt to talk to the Houthi military. And this is a regular army. They have guerrilla elements, but it is a regular army. They did take the capital years ago. And all they have to do is put restrictions on Israel's behavior. Now, no one has ever believed that the U.S. is an impartial broker. Not during the Camp David Accords. No one could be that stupid. But to be an active military participant on Israel's side, given this genocide, this will change things from here on out. In other words, we will lose our own men to keep Israel in its policy of cleansing Palestine of actual Palestinians. In other words, the Houthis have been clear. We will stop this. They've said this in numerous languages. We will stop this if Israel simply stops military operations long enough so that humanitarian assistance can be brought into what's left of Gaza. Something that Whitney says, and I'm, again, this is an admirable movement from the Houthis. Again, they have the overwhelming majority of the world's population behind them, but they're by themselves. Other countries, like Syria, for example, don't want to invite, and Syria needs to regain its strength, of course, don't want to invite more American attacks that right now they don't have the strength to respond. Again, the Houthis are putting their own lives at risk for a group of people that they don't have regular intercourse with. Now, Al Jazeera did something that very few newspapers have done. And they've put out an extremely well done analysis of the situation. Al Jazeera, it's their analysis section. In the Red Sea, the U.S. has no good options against the Houthis. And I don't know who wrote it, but it's clearly someone who knows what they're talking about. Because Operation Prosperity Guardian doesn't really have a specific mandate. If it was something as simple to like prevent hits on merchant ships, well, they would just create convoys. which is, you know, centuries old. Slow, defenseless commercial cargo sail in columns at precisely defined distances from each other. Now I'm quoting directly here. Lead flanked and tailed by fast warships that can take on any threat. But that has its limitations. It's big, it's cumbersome, it extends for miles. You have to leave a lot of space in between. They're still humongous targets. Your typical container carrier is almost 1,000 feet long. There's a limited number of missiles available in general, let alone just on a, how a convoy would be armed. And there needs to be a reserve for defending the ship itself. These missiles have to be replenished, but that can only be done far away, given the circumstances. There has to be a critical 250 nautical miles along the Yemeni coast from Bab al-Mandeb Strait. If you're going as slow as 15 knots, it's going to take a while. It's going to take 16 hours to get to a place where you can rearm, meaning that for that length of time, the convoy, the militarized part of the convoy, is going to be vulnerable. And the Pentagon, of course, apparently is unaware of this. They needed Al Jazeera to point this out. The naval escort is going to do nothing but prevent a huge target for clearly well-equipped and well-trained missile launchers in, from Yemen. And the strategy doesn't work. The Maersk-Hangzhou incident proves that it doesn't. Nothing is going to deter these attacks just because U.S. warships are there. Nor do they have anything to do with freedom of navigation, as everyone knows. It's not economically proper. It's not militarily practical. And this is a well-equipped opponent. Now, Whitney goes so far as to say that because of how absurd this policy is, there's a chance that they meant for it to fail. They say every admiral would tell his political superiors that military necessity calls for attacks on Houthi missile infrastructure on the ground in Yemen. Fixed and mobile launch sites, production storage facilities, etc. A proactive response to a missile threat, in other words, to destroy the Houthi ship targeting capability, rather than a reactive one limited to shooting missiles down as they come in. Now, we've heard that already from the Wall Street Journal. In theory, attacks against this infrastructure could be based on satellite, UAVs, and all the rest of it. But the only realistic chance at meaningful success would require the use of combat aircraft. Bombers based on the US two nuclear carriers in the region. They would claim that this has military justification, but you're also talking about a massive political risk. Especially the US being seen, not just in the Arab and Islamic world, but by the entire planet, as now being a direct party to genocide. Everyone outside of the Western center bubble is aware that they have one purpose in attacking Israeli shipping. And is the U.S. prepared when this begins to spread? Nor can the U.S. claim that it doesn't want any escalation when they simply don't have the capacity to make this happen. With a massive manpower, equipment, and ammunition shortage, by the way. 9 years, this was the policy in Saudi Arabia, to bomb or shell Houthi positions on the ground, missiles or otherwise, and it didn't work. Well, if it didn't work for Saudi Arabia, who certainly knows a lot more than the U.S. does, are ground troops an option here? Which means that these ships are going to be sitting ducks for a while. But maybe that's exactly what this is about. On December 26th, the MSC United was hit by several missiles. Remember, there's very few humans on these things. They have a skeleton crew, and that's about it. But the U.S. and the Israelis are deliberately telling these shipping companies that everyone's in danger. It's the APAC strategy. Now, Flexport Incorporated is a analysis firm, among other things, that deals with these shipping issues. And they say that as of a few days ago, 300 vessels, 4.3 million containers have change course or plan to change course. And it keeps increasing. We're talking now 20% of global capacity. But going around Africa takes at least 25% longer than the Suez Canal. So the Suez Canal, yet again, is front page. Last month, you had have 100 attacks of various types on Israeli shipping. Of course, these guys will just say commercial shipping. But arrivals were down 87%, and gas tankers about 30%. Automotive carriers about 25%, and same thing for the Suez Canal. But whatever the U.S. does, it's not going to be sufficient for, or it may even increase, major shipping companies' desire to just stay away. Of course, the question is, population of the planet is going to say, well, this is Israel's fault. The Houthis are the good guys. Of course they are. They couldn't possibly be any more reasonable. They don't want to be targeted by the U.S. Navy, but they refuse to back down. So far, they've already won. You know, is there a more aggressive strategy? There probably is. There's no declaration of war. We know how the regime operates. But given American military failures in the recent past, I don't think there's much they can do here. You're talking about an all-out war on the Arabian Peninsula just so the Israelis can continue to slaughter women and children in Gaza. Yet again, Russia and China win, and the U.S. is more isolated than it's ever been before. The American century is over. So at least in that sense, 2024 is starting okay by May. Thank you, everyone. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.